Welcome to a Modern Nonprofit Podcast, powered by the Charity CFO, your compass for creative solutions in running your nonprofit. I'm Tasha Anderson, your host and guide through this nonprofit maze. From fundraising to volunteer management, we've got your back. Join us each episode for fresh, game-changing strategies that can make a real impact. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of A Modern Nonprofit Podcast. I'm Tasha Anderson, I'm your host. Today I bring along a new friend, not so new to me. John, we've had conversations before, but John Mark Vanderpool, you are the co-founder of a business called Social Impact Solutions. First, John, thank you for joining us today and participating in the conversation of probably a couple things, because when we have a tendency to get talking shop, it can go any different direction. So I'm excited to have this conversation, but specifically around fundraising strategies, if that's your focus. What I really love is using measurement to tell your story. And as an accountant, obviously I'm biased in the kind of the spirit of measuring all things. And when I meet a fundraiser or a storyteller that loves to use numbers, I get super excited. And that's how we became friends, John. So welcome aboard and thanks for joining us.
Tasha, thank you so much. It's a delight to be here and I'm very excited to have this conversation. There's a lot of directions that we can go in, but it's super exciting.
Yeah, we had different conversations a little bit late last year, and we were kind of talking about, you know, the environment in which nonprofits are operating in, and a lot of concern around a lot of things, right? I mean, it's no secret many of our clients struggled in Q4 of 2023. Their year-end giving wasn't quite what they had hoped it to be. There's all of this talk about inflation and rising costs and you know, staff turnover and raising salaries to give up. There's so many different pressure points that nonprofits are feeling right now. And we kind of ended our conversation back in December, kind of talking about some of those things. And I guess that really hasn't changed for a lot of organizations at this point. I know in your work, specifically around fundraising, I'm sure people are calling you all the time. How do I get this, you know, course corrected for fundraising? And we get calls all the time. Hey, we need some operational efficiencies and we need some expense cut and that sort of thing. So let's just start with that, because I think it's top of mind for a lot of people right now that are running nonprofit organizations. Let's talk about inflation. And John, you and I were chatting about this survey that came out from BDO late last year. And it had talked about that 45% of nonprofits are going to combat inflation through fundraising efficiencies. So raising more dollars using less. How are you seeing that in your world? Or how are nonprofits trying to do that? Or have you had conversations with your clients about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just to simplify things, like when you're in a high inflation environment, you just have to address two things. Are we going to raise more money and cut costs? So it's top line, bottom line, you know, kind of a conversation. Yeah. And the whole idea of, okay, well, we need to cut costs and raise more. You're really just saying, I need to get more out of doing less, right? I'm just going to do fewer things and I need to have a much higher output for that. The main thing is that we see when you're in a very, like we have been for the last 12-ish years, an economically friendly environment, it gives you the ability to experiment. And there's a lot of safety and margin and things like that, where it's like, yeah, we're going to have all this social media going on. We're going to have all these events going on. We're going to just do lots of things. And, you know, maybe we'll net enough and feel good about it. Hey, we grew 10%. But when we enter into these kinds of environments, we really just have to double down on what works and cut everything else. And that feels scary for a lot of folks. Like, oh, well, we've been exploring this new marketing channel. Well, you've been doing it for 3 years and it's not producing anything. And we really just need to talk about which one of your marketing channels, development channels, you know, whatever you want to talk about is actually producing high quality new donors that are giving more money over the long run. So really trying to simplify. And one thing that we like to, we sort of put this in an identity standpoint, ask you, like, what kind of nonprofit are you? What kind of fundraising nonprofit are you? And we talk about, oh, we're in human services. I love that. That's fabulous. Right. But that's really more of like your operations, which is really, really, really important. We have sort of like identifying with what kind of fundraising organization are you? And when we evaluate this, it always comes out to the same thing. 80% of your revenue comes from 20%, you know, of your efforts. Every single time. It's the Pareto principle, P people are very familiar with it.
Right.
And I'll just give you an example. We were talking with an organization in Canada 4 months ago, and they were really upset that, oh, we only have these very few funders. They were raising significant sums of money. It's like, well, let's talk about the channel at which you were raising that. And they were a grant writing organization, but they thought they needed mm-hmm. to be a peer-to-peer fundraising organization in order to diversify. It's like, no, you don't need to change your whole fundraising model. You just need to write more grants and get more grants. Like, you're a grant writing
organization. Do more of what, exactly. Do more of what's proven. Right. Yeah.
Right. You don't need to change, oh, we need to have this huge database of donors that are giving us, you know, $1,500 a month. No, you need to be more proficient at the thing you're already good at. So do more of what works.
I love that. And I mean, you really just describe the internal struggle I have when I sit in on these board meetings, or I've served on boards, or, you know, had conversations at the finance committee level when talking about the budget. And I'm always hearing the same thing. We need to diversify our funding, diversify our funding, diversify our funding. And when they think about diversifying in the conversations I participated, we have a lot of governmental funding, even though it's federal, state, local, right? And that, in and of itself, is diversified, you know.
Yes.
Let's just go with that. I mean, there's some technicalities maybe there, or like you said, grant writing foundations, you know, or grants, right? That could be diversified. You could have 30 different grants, right? But oftentimes when we talk about diversification, we're talking about, well, if I have a lot of government funding, now I need to do more grant writing, or if I already have a lot of government contracts and grant writing, now I need to add a bunch of individual donors, or I need to do crowd fundraising, or I need to add events, or I need to, it's, and what I've noticed from my own personal experience of growing this business, the more you hone in on just keep doing more of the things that you're good at until for whatever reason, something is flashing at you and maybe you should think about the next iteration, mm-hmm. keep doing more of what you're good at, because that, to your point, and I love that, is in and of itself diversifying, right? Absolutely. You've gone from 10 grants to 30 grants. That's diversifying because they're totally different people or different, you know, foundations, organizations, whatever. So I love that. And maybe you don't have to add a whole lot more money. You know, it may not cost that more to write more grants compared to, well, now I have to invest a bunch into digital marketing to create like all these fundraising platforms, or absorb a bunch of costs doing a bunch of special events that may or may not be fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
I just couldn't, and your analogy with what you've done with Charity CFO is the perfect analogy with this, because you've seen what works and what doesn't. You're like, great, let's double down on what works. And that sounds so logical, just putting it in that sense. Sometimes it's hard to do that internally, like if you're looking at your own organization, because typically what happens is, and I love Charity Water, they get thrown under the bus all the time, but we're just going to use mm-hmm. them as an example. And I'm a huge fan of what they've pulled off, because mm-hmm. they're a relatively young organization. I don't even think they're 20 years old.
Yeah.
And people look at them like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do exactly what Charity Water's doing. They do all of this amazing peer-to-peer work. And so they're huge mm-hmm. peer-to-peer. We need to be doing more of that, because it's mm-hmm. clearly working for them. We should be doing that. There's a million reasons why that's not effective, but you really just need to see like, okay, well, what is it that already works well for you? If you've been around for longer than 5 years, great. You've made it past the 5-year mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you already good at? Because if you dive into Charity Water, they're a grant writing organization that has a peer-to-peer front office, right? They have a front mm-hmm. office peer-to-peer, but they've got 160 plus family foundations that fund their operations, right? Like mm-hmm. that was the innovation of the business model, is mm-hmm. all of the money that, you know, standard donors give them goes straight to the mission, but 160, you know, family foundations fund their operations, which that's the whole gimmick that they have. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Right.
But we look at other organizations, you're like, oh, wow, they're doing this so well. We should do that. It's just so expensive to mm-hmm. add these kind. It is so costly. And I mean, my goodness, it is so hard. It's hard enough to be a great grant writing organization, because that tells me that you're doing a great job of due diligence, tracking your social impacts, tracking outputs, and reporting back to your grantors. Mm-hmm. If you want to throw on a peer-to-peer fund, like peer-to-peer thing, and I'm just using that as an example, it's a totally different game, and it's so mm-hmm. different than what you're already great at. So do more of what you're great at.
So let's go back to this fundraising efficiency. I'm thinking, say you're a leader of an organization and you have a pretty broad spectrum of fundraising initiatives, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the trivia night, you've got the gala, you've got the 5K, you've got some individual donors, not a ton. You've got a small but growing base of, you know, foundation grants. You've got some government contracts. You're starting to get some bequests, having conversations about planned giving. I mean, you're covering all the bases. Right. And the hard part is when you're a leader, if you know in your heart, like, we need to pull back on some of these things to make my team more focused, efficient, but mm-hmm. pitching that to your board when it's like, why would you cut that trivia night that made us $20,000? Right. You're taking money, you know, off the table or what have you for a, you know, guess or a gamble that you're going to mm-hmm. be able to make it up somewhere else. Because I think that's part of the challenge for a leader of a nonprofit. I mean, you go interview any of these nonprofits leaders, and they're going to be like, I wish we didn't have to do that. But it's like, how do you get through the board with saying we need to do more with less, and things we need to cut back on actual dollars expended or time, human resources expended? Have you seen any nonprofits be successful in pitching that to the board and getting their buy-in on, like, hey, we don't need to do like three events, even look like they're fruitful. We need to pare down so that we can redeploy resources to more grant writing, for example.
I think that's a great question. And yeah, the answer is yes, to answer your question quickly. The easiest thing you can do, and this is Jim Collins 101. So go back to all the mm-hmm. fabulous Jim Collins books that are out there, is just conduct small experiments, right? Mm-hmm. Conduct an experiment. You're like, we're going to take $1,000 and we're going to do something with it. We're going to turn it mm-hmm. into $10,000, but we're going to take $1,000 and find a way to efficiently turn that into $10,000. And to mm-hmm. be clear, you know, there's only really four main marketing channels. There was a great book that came out on this last year called $100 Million Leads. And it was just, mm-hmm. there's only really four channels. You've got warm outreach, you've got cold outreach, you've got mm-hmm. content, and you've got paid advertising. And within mm-hmm. those, yeah, within those, there's a jillion different mediums, right? There's Facebook, there's
sure.
Twitter, there's
sure.
all those different things. And mm-hmm. just decide, you know, which one of those four is your one. Yeah. Unless you're doing north of $20 million a year, you really have one, and that's great. Just mm-hmm. just understand 10 to 20 million, you still need to have your one channel. If you're doing north of that, we can talk about two channels. But just thinking about, okay, let's conduct an experiment. You know, what are we already great at? And just really focus. Like, if you're really good at events, we're really good at attracting strangers to come to an event, like a 5K. And then we tell our story really effectively at that 5K. And then we convert mm-hmm. those people into sustainer donors really mm-hmm. efficiently. Great. Mm-hmm. Every quarter, you've got your 5K, or every year, you've got your 5K. And that's 10,000 new donors into the organization that you mm-hmm. know you're going to convert 10% of them at $100 a month. Fabulous, mm-hmm. right? Like, make that math work for you. But understand, customer or donor acquisition costs are really, really important to have dialed in, because that's where you mm-hmm. make all of your ongoing revenue, where you can really make those investments. It's just like, yeah. okay, great. We know that we can attract and convert at this price. And we know our donor lifetime value is at least three times what that costs, minimum three times what that costs to be able to pull mm-hmm. that off.
I love that. So writing that down for my clients, add an experimental fundraising budget line item, even if it's 1,000. And I will tell you from my experience that, going back to the four marketing channels that I don't think people probably realize, I didn't realize it until it happened. When you focus on one channel, somehow the other channels start picking up momentum. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. My mm-hmm. team focused really hard on outbound. We need to introduce our concept to other people. We're going to mm-hmm. go out there and find people. The more we did that inbound, because you said there's outbound, inbound, paid, and content.
Right.
The more we went out there, people talk, the more people came to us. And I'm like, okay, I didn't realize that was going to happen, right? Right. And then when people are reaching out, it's like, Tasha, I love your content. Like, you should create more. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll do that.
Right.
You know, so it just keeps spreading. So it's not a very, you know, linear thinking, only this, like this path, or, you know, right. that if you go this route, all other routes are abandoned. They almost feed each other a little bit organically. I would say, with the exception of paid, that's either a yes or a no. Are you going to pay right. or are you not? But the other three, or at least inbound and outbound, are, I have experienced, closely related. So So that's interesting. So that's revenue. And I know that's really high on everyone's mind always, in any business owner. And I have a little bit of a controversial take on, you know, inflation and dealing with budgets and concerns. Mm-hmm. And I've said this a lot, that I think in my experience in almost 15 plus years of working exclusively with nonprofit organizations, that they tend to focus on the expense side of the budget rather than the revenue side. And where I've seen, I have lots of entrepreneur friends, obviously me, I'm an entrepreneur, that I find that the difference between really entrepreneurial minded, especially in the for-profit world, they focus less on expense reduction and they focus on how do I make more money? This is the cost of doing business. I don't like it, but not a whole lot I can do about it. How do I make more money? And in the nonprofit world, because I have spent I couldn't even imagine how many equivalent years I've spent in budget conversations with nonprofits. The focus is almost always on expenses and cutting those expenses. I'm curious too, and I think we've talked about this in the past. I think you and I are in a similar spirit of that. Like, how many expenses can you cut to the point it's just flat out detrimental? And how do you shift more into like revenue creation rather than expense cutting? So 38% of people in this survey said they were going to focus on expense reduction as a response to inflation. Where have you seen this go wrong with some of your clients?
Well, before we started working with one, I'll just go ahead and give you a short story on that.
A little case study.
This was right before we started working with them. They cut a third of their employee base. And so we're talking about, I think they cut 50-ish jobs in response to COVID. And I'm like, well, that's an interesting call. And they had their reasons, and I'm not going to go into all of that. But one of the things to really look at is just like, how do I turn these individuals? Because obviously, I mean, Tasha, you're the accountant. Would you say that on average, people are spending 50%+ of their total cost on people?
100%, if not more. Yeah. So I've seen all the way up to like 60% to 80%. Yeah, depending on the type of organization. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we just have to think like, how do we make those people so much more productive, so much more effective, just from a fundraising standpoint? And I know there are a lot of people in operations that will throw up when they say, I don't want to raise a single dime. I'm here to do the mission. And that's really important. But your mission also includes fundraising. And so we really need to talk about how do we make the team more efficient to raise more money so that you can do more good, right? The money's coming from donors for you to do good. The people that you're serving are not paying you. You're not a business. And so we need to be able to really, really prove that. One of the things you can do is actually measure the impact of your work, number one, because that means your development and marketing team can go to town on raising money. That is the number one reason why funders give, is the social impact data that you get, that you tell them. It's the number one reason why they give. They want to know, what difference can I make by giving you $100,000? So we have to tell them, right? We have to remind them, this is the difference you can make. And so that right there, but then also thinking about, how do I make my development and marketing team more effective? I would restructure their days and really think like on a true inputs and outputs standpoint. Like, you just say, okay, if you're an outbound nonprofit, you're making warm outreach, cold outreach, I don't really care, something like that. I need every person on this team to be making 100 calls before 11 a.m. So get dialing, like that kind of like, we need to become a more efficient team, more effective team. And we just need to, I know this sounds terrible from an HR standpoint, but we need to like really build a team of like, we're trying to be a professional organization that is doing things very, very well, very effectively. And the difference that you're making as an individual by doing this is unfathomable. We have a client right now that is transitioning to this 100 calls a day. And this is perfect with conversation with you, because they were just, 100 emails a day. They were a little depressed because they only saw 4 people convert from 80 emails. I'm just like, guys, that's a great conversion rate. Like, what are we upset about? It's because they had never, they didn't know that 2% to 3% of the people that you reach out to, you know, like, great, we've got a 2% to 3%, you know, show rate, conversion rate, all of those kinds of rates that you look into. And it's just, how can we make the team better? And so how can the team get better all along? It's when we start rowing in the same direction in sync with one another. And so when we know our channel, I call these the daily marketing activities. What are your daily marketing activities that have got to be knocked out before lunch? Because if you do that every single day, your improvement, your rate of improvement, your overall improvement is dramatic.
Well, what you're describing, and I never thought about this before, what you're describing, well, actually, I get lots of thoughts whenever I think about this conversation. What you're describing is how any well-ran business that has a sales function operates. You decide, are you an outbound or inbound initially, you know, if you don't already have the infrastructure in place, because I've had to go through this exercise myself. Am I an outbound or am I an inbound organization? And I've never like even considered that a nonprofit should ask themselves that question. I don't think they know. They're like, I don't know. We'll just, and how I describe marketing is just like throw spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. You know, who knows? We're just going to be doing the things until maybe hopefully something, you know, shows up in the mail and by way of check or what have you. Right. So ask yourself, are you an inbound or are you an outbound? And then if it's not coming inbound, guess what? By default, you're an outbound, right? Yes. What does that mean? And I tell people, you know, it's such a lagging indicator, and we have like daily metrics that we track. How many people are we talking to? How many on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, and what we're doing today, if we lull somebody's out on PTO, we have some tech issues that keep us from sending emails or whatever, that's going to show up 2 months from now, because that's our sales cycle. That's our close cycle, right? Yes. And so I can't imagine that, you know, and I know this is controversial and I'll probably get some emails and some hate comments about it, but I know there's this idea in the nonprofit world that, well, we're nonprofit, we don't operate that way. But what is like the other alternative? If all these other businesses are successful in revenue generation for people that had no idea that I needed to buy a widget from this particular company until they reached out and they pitched it to me and convinced me I do need to, you know, transfer my money to them in some way, why not work that way with a nonprofit as well? Right. And why not hold your development team accountable for reaching out to people? And this isn't just your fundraising team. Interesting story. I have the same expectation for my recruiting team. I say, I want 10 people a week that we did not know last week introduced and into our database. Doesn't mean they're applying for jobs. Doesn't mean that we even have a job for them. You need to get out there and meet people. And I'm going to run a report every week and I'm going to see. So you're going to be going out there to network events, career fairs, going to the universities, meeting with people and adding them to the list. That is really your number one focus. And the consistency over time, when you do that day by day, the dividends over a long period of time are just astronomical. And so we don't just do that for sales. We do that for recruiting too. And so why couldn't you do that with fundraising? Why couldn't you do that with volunteer management or, you know, pick any area really? It's just that intentional outreach rather than
you're 100%
maybe right. maybe spending hours trying to create Canva graphics and put them on your social media, like get on the horn and start calling people, reaching out to people.
And listen, Tasha, I could not agree with you more, because where else are they going to come from? Right. Where else are those new recruits going to come from? There's not some magic fairy that just like, oh my gosh, I would love to work for you. This is, you know, it takes so much. I think this is my big eye opener, is like the work required is so much greater than what I understood and what most people think. The work required to get 1,000 new donors into a database in a month or in a quarter, it's just substantial. Like, it's not insignificant. Mm-hmm. It is so much work. And people that do fundraising events, they get this to a point where they need corporate partners, because that's typically an outbound function, right? Or they already have the relationship, but it's typically an outbound function to where, okay, I'm going to contact 100 people and 30% will reply. And then, you know, maybe 10% will convert at whatever level. Mm-hmm. That's just how everything works. I mean, literally, you've got to do that with recruiting. You've got to do it with all of your marketing. You've got to do it with everything. Executive leadership, like everything falls into a different type of funnel. And I don't remember who said this. I heard it from Andrew Huberman, but he was quoting somebody else. No inputs, no outputs, right? Mm-hmm. If we don't have inputs, we don't have outputs.
Right. Yeah. I can have a whole separate conversation about that. but I won't, because I want to get to a big part of why we are here today, is talking about this impact measurement. Okay, so I'll rattle off a couple statistics, but this is the work that you do, really. I mean, after all, your firm's called Social Impact. Let's talk about, and what really struck up this conversation with us is, you know, 82% of nonprofits lack the adequate technology or even the framework to measure social impact. We know it's important. The overwhelming majority of nonprofits have no ability to do that. 82% also lack human resources. Like, they don't have the people, they don't have the systems, they don't have the framework. They're ground zero. 81% lack program objectives. Their program is great. It's feels good. It seemingly has an impact, but they don't have any defined program objectives. So the reality is most nonprofits are just continuing to evolve their programs just based on the kind of the people they're serving. I think without being intentional about how do they measure, what do they measure? And I understand that's a bit of a moral dilemma as someone that has worked in the nonprofit space, especially around mental health services, seeing what we need to do for the client base that we serve and balancing that with what the people that financially support us are wanting, expecting, or prioritizing with respect to their funding. It's challenging. So let's talk about social impact and how that relates to your work and where you've seen so many of these organizations not be equipped to do it. Right. How you've all started getting them on the path of being successful in doing that.
I think it's really important to acknowledge that running a nonprofit is extraordinarily hard, right? It's just important to say it right out the gate where, you know, pretty much from day one, you have the expectations of a publicly traded company, right?
Yeah.
I've got to open all the books. I've got to have, you know, a board. I've got to do all this stuff. I get audited all the time. You know, stuff that drives us entrepreneurs completely up the walls. Like, are you kidding me? I've got to do what? Like that kind of stuff. It feels like it detracts so much from the mission. And I get why they do it, but I totally understand why it's frustrating. Because like you, Tasha, I've been in your shoes on that, been in the same shoes on that. And so just understanding it's hard, right?
Yeah.
It's all hard. That being said, there's just a few things that if you get right, everything falls into place. It's just a couple of things. Like, if we know what is the problem that we're solving, like, what's the problem? More specifically, what is our piece of the problem that we're solving? There's a wonderful group at Duke's MBA program that's called the Center for the Advancement of Social Entrepreneurs and or Social Enterprises. And they do this wonderful training. And the individuals, it's Erin Worsham that leads it over there. She was talking about, we don't just need to talk about the problem. We need to talk about the problem. We need to talk about what is our piece of the problem. Right. We're not solving world hunger. Right. No one organization is solving that. You're solving an aspect of that, like maybe a part of the supply chain, or maybe in a specific location, or maybe something else. But just being really, really clear about you, the problem that you deal with, your piece of the problem. But then on top of that, what's our plan for solving that problem? What does the plan actually look like? And how do we know if it's working or not working? You were talking about leading indicators versus lagging indicators. That stuff is the lifeblood of any kind of acquisition team, right? Of any kind of sales team. But the same's true for nonprofit programs. Like, how do we know if this stuff is working? We've got a client that does wonderful work in the developing world where they're specifically working with malnourished women and children. That's the mission. Usually pregnant women going through a maternal health program. And we're talking about severely, severely malnourished individuals. And so what do? They provide doctors, nurses, nutrition, checkups. They have an EHR where they're tracking all the data, you know, in a database. And they're trying to say, like, okay, how much weight are these women gaining? What are their different metrics? You know, how do we know if it's working? We're looking at birth complications versus healthy births, like lots of very, very important things. And without that data, they have no idea, right?
Right.
So absolutely, like, what's working? We have no idea. But since they do have that data, it's a total game changer. And so just understanding, if we can just get a few things right, what's our problem? What's our piece of the problem? What's our plan? And how do we know it's working or not working? That's really the basis for data-driven decision-making. It's a fun phrase to throw around, but it's really just, how do we know our programs are providing the outcomes, which is your impact? I just want to clear that up. The outcomes of your program is the social impact that you're creating. How do we know if we're accomplishing that?
So we were chatting before I start hitting record. So say you're an organization, you're doing that, right? You've kind of figured that out. You've figured out what the problem is, what your piece of the problem is, and kind of what your plan is. And you've even gone as far as starting to collect some data on that to prove, you know, this is how we're going to, you know, essentially measure whether we're successful or not. And something on your website that struck me was this idea. You have a question on your website that says, has your organization or business become stagnant? And when I think about that, I've met so many really cool organizations that I think has good data. At least when I talk to them, they talk about the data. They have a great mission. I think it is having a difference, but their story and how they communicate that is just falling flat, or they're just sharing that data. I remember going to an event. I went like 3 years in a row, and I went 1 year and I was like, wow, like I'm going to get involved with this organization. This is a real problem. And then I went the next 2 years and it was like, they didn't even mention these like key statistics that are mind blowing, that anyone would hear these statistics would get their checkbooks out and immediately I need to participate in this. So when I read that on your website, it really got me thinking. First of all, how do you know that your story is stagnant? Because sometimes, you know, we just can't see it ourselves when we're on the inside and, you know, and then how do you fix that problem? Who do you hire? Where do you go to? Because sometimes your director of development could be great at writing grants. They're not maybe great at storytelling. They're not great at marketing. Like, so how do, say you're doing all those things, how do you go from here to there, knowing your story is stagnant, and how to fix it if it is?
I think it's a great question. So let's just make a few assumptions. Let's make an assumption that you have donors, you email them regularly, they give to you regularly. You can just sort of do the quick and dirty analysis on this. Are people reading arguments, right? Do people care? People opening them, are they clicking?
Yeah.
So look at your open rates. I mean, you can do this right now, log into whatever platform you use.
Sure, yeah.
Are people opening your emails and are they clicking on things? What's their engagement look like? Same thing with socials. And so after 5 minutes, you'd be like, why do we have less than 15% of our people opening emails? We had a client that was at a 9% open rate, which is bad, in case anyone's wondering. And it was because of this problem. It was beating this dead horse of not talking about the problem the right way, but it was just not an effective communication strategy. Over the course of, you know, 8 to 12 months, we got them up to a 60% open rate. So, I mean, it was, they went from like way below industry average to 3 times industry average just by improving their communication strategy. And so that's sort of the really easy way. Are people engaging with your content or engaging with you? And then are they giving or are they lapsing? Are people, do you have a really large list of people that gave last year, but not this year? Like the live ones and the silence, some year, but not this year. Those are the quick ways to know, like, if things are resonating. The other thing is just in-person conversations. Like, do you have a one-liner that you use? Like, which again, one-liners are great. Problem, plan, solution, right? What's the problem that you solve? What's your plan for solving that problem? And what does the world look like as you create the solution? And so we love taking people through this, through these processes. And we put all this together for free on something called fundraisingquiz.org. So if anyone's listening and they're curious about how do I fix these problems, fundraisingquiz.org, it's like a 2-minute quiz. We'll give you a quick analysis and a free course on how to improve, you know, what we're talking about here. It has to do with social impact, but a lot of it has to do with fundraising, marketing, communications. And so just thinking about that and how do you fix it? Right? And that's what's so exciting is when we really just look at the, if the engagement's really low, we have to ask why, you know, like, why is it so low? We've got to get, just really get into the nitty gritty of like, okay, people are not responding because what? And the other thing is, if you have a team, like, ask them, like, how compelling is our story? How compelling is the work that we do? How necessary is the work that we do? Many organizations have remarkably needed programs, right? So it's not right. It's not fair. It's not any of those things that they're not being, you know, rewarded for the hard work that they're doing. And that's why we started our organization, because it drives us crazy seeing these great organizations that, you know, are not raising much money and they have a huge need that they're trying to solve. And I think it's really, really important to go through that. But then on how do you fix it? Obviously that fundraisingquiz.org, it's there for you, but I want to give you this as well. Think about what motivates people to give. The two primary drivers, I said one of them earlier, It's the impact data that you have, and it's the stories of transformation that you tell. Typically, like before 2018, 2019, the number one reason was your stories of a transformation. People are just like, oh, wow, they went from this life to this life. It was like the before and after pictures, like that kind of a thing. Sure. I want to be a part of that. But the next thing that we really, I mean, the impact data, it speaks so strongly to like, what is the issue and how bad is that issue? How bad is that hurting us? And then how can I, as a funder, you've got to point the picture. The story is about the funder. If you're trying to raise money, the story is about them. Right? It truly is. How can they make a difference by giving your organization a lot of money? Because people want to make an impact. We live in a wonderful society in a wonderful time. People want to make a difference. You just got to give them compelling reasons to make a difference through your organization.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier too. You know, so many organizations I work with deal with really, you know, I mean, arguably all organizations deal with kind of crisis related, you know, ministry, for lack of a better word, right? Yeah. Whether it's homelessness, domestic violence, the early childhood education crisis going on in the country, you know, mental health issues and things. And, you know, talking to so many people that spend their days in and out of doing this work, understand what a real problem this is. And yet when I see a lot of the storytelling and marketing, I think a lot of organizations kind of shy away from being brutally honest about how bad it is. I don't know why we're so pleasant about it. It's like, well, you know, what, I don't know, just, it's just so pleasant. It's just so soft. It's so, oh, you know, it's like, we're, I don't know if we're afraid to look hysterical or be hysterical or be off-putting to people, but those are the things that, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's my personality. I'm a little bold and kind of in your face, as I've been told. So I like those bold and in your face statements that, hey, this is a problem. Because when you are an individual that is likely in the philanthropic world, like I am, I mean, not only do I work in this space, but I'm a donor to a lot. And I obviously get a lot of correspondence and go to a lot of events and things like that. When you are somebody that's in that space a lot, and you're asked directly or indirectly for a lot of money, you kind of need something to be bold and in your face and catch your attention. And what catches my attention anyway, are those things like, wow, I thought I've been around a while now that I didn't think things like this would surprise me anymore, but this surprised me. And so I'm paying attention to that, right? And how do we make our storytelling, I think, more bold? Because I think sometimes it's a little too soft. It needs, in my opinion, I would love to see it really reflect the urgency that it is and be unapologetic about that. If we're dealing with really horrible things like childhood hunger or mental health issues for school-aged children, talking about those statistics that are pretty jaw-dropping and be unapologetic about that, because frankly, that's the world we live in and people need to know that. And couple that with going back to the conversation earlier, by the way, 80% of my budget is related to staffing. And in order to make an impact, I need your help to create enough resources to give them a raise this year so we can keep doing the work that we're doing. Just say that, have that conversation, you know, I think would resonate with a lot of people that are in the philanthropic world writing those, you know, gifts, because they understand those things really. So.
Absolutely.
There's so many things that, yeah, we can keep talking about. I know we really kind of speak the same language. But is there, I know we're kind of running out of time already. We always do this. Anything else that you want to share with organizations as it relates to fundraising efficiency, budget? I know we wanted to talk about some other kind of like money related things. I feel like we're kind of running out of time, maybe next iteration of our conversation. Or any other resources that, you know, your company can help these nonprofits solve this kind of social impact measurement problem or fundraising efficiency or content that you have that maybe further speaks to this issue about doing more with less.
Absolutely, Tasha. So I want to, number one, just want to address that first part with shying away from the problem. So if anyone's familiar with StoryBrand, Donna Miller started a company however many years ago, and we were StoryBrand certified. We've been StoryBrand certified since 2017, something like that, like their second or third cohort. And when you look at the story arc, right, there's a character who has a problem, who meets a guide, who gives him a plan, calls him to action, and that either ends in success or failure. That is a story arc. And for nonprofits, talking to their donors, you've got to, like, and it's true for the for-profit world as well, but we've got to lean into the problem. And Don puts it this way: if we stop talking about our problems, about our customers' problems, our donors' problems, our people mm-hmm. that we serve's problems, if we stop talking about problems, people mm-hmm. will stop paying attention to our organizations. And it's just true. And so for the people out there that are like, okay, I get that, but I need to write 52 emails. So a week, an email per week, every week of the year. How do I balance it out with out ringing like this death gong versus, you know, telling good news too? How do I not come mm-hmm. across like tone deaf, mean, rude, abrasive, all of that? And what we found to be really, really beneficial for our clients, but also people that we just advise, is, okay, put this together in a content calendar and really just decide, okay, great. You're going to be able to directly talk about this problem at least 20% of the time, where you need to be very, very clear. But the way that you vary, let's just say the pain factor, right? Mm-hmm. The really, really harsh language is you tell stories of transformation, right? This is what this person was going through before mm-hmm. they started working with our organization. That's mm-hmm. how we remind people of the problem. We use data, we use statistics, right? This is the reality for people that live in this part of the world. You know, we're looking at GDPs of like 800, right? These people are making mm-hmm. no money a day. It's crazy. Some of the like mm-hmm. extreme poverty in the world. Great. I don't mean great, but like use that language, right? Mm-hmm. Use the language of reminding people, this is the problem that we exist to solve. Like, just make it clear. Mm-hmm. But then talk about how your organization solves that problem and the impact that donors can create on the other end of that. So like 20% of the time, pound them on the head with the issue, right? Say part of your fundraising strategy. They need to be ghastly aware of why mm-hmm. their $1,000, $10,000, $100,000, $1 million is making a huge difference, of like what it's going towards. But then 80% of the time, still vary it with stories of transformation and impact data and hope for the future, right? You've mm-hmm. got to paint that picture of hope while at the same time, and I love this, I think this is one of the smartest things that Don's ever done, is just saying, these are the things we want to help people avoid. We want to help our constituents avoid a life of pain. We want to help our constituents avoid a life of hunger. We want to help our constituents avoid X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And this is true for mm-hmm. advocacy groups too, right? Advocacy groups, y'all don't get enough love. It's absolutely mm-hmm. true for the advocacy groups as well. And just making that super, super clear. And this mm-hmm. is what we do for organizations, right? We put together all their communication strategies. We help them measure their true social impact so we can marry those communication strategies together so that people raise more money so they can do more good. I mean, right. it's that simple.
Love that. So let's think about, you know, whether it's, you know, like I said, this conversation is around nonprofit, but it just really, I think, shifts my perspective on, you know, the organizations I work for. And I always see so many parallels, if not intersections, between the work that I see entrepreneurs doing all the time and the work that nonprofit world is doing over time. And the nonprofit mm-hmm. world is always talking about like modernizing, shifting practices, leveraging technology, doing more with less, you know. And the reality is there's not a need to just kind of recreate the wheel or just create a whole different wheel, frankly, and do a completely different thing than things that are proving successful time and time again for other businesses. So I love the idea. And I think this whole conversation gives a lot to think about. And it kind of goes back to something you said at the very beginning, just be willing to experiment, even just a small amount, whether it's, hey, for 1 month, we're going to try to do this outbound. We're going to see how many new names we can collect and add to our newsletter. Right. For this 1 month, we're just going to actually dive into our newsletter and see what those open rates actually are mm-hmm. and switch up our messaging to see if we can have better open rates, right? For 1 month, we're going to, whatever it is, just setting a little goal, and whether it ends up costing money or not costing money, because experimental doesn't have to necessarily cost money. It's just doing something different, prioritizing your time a little bit differently. So I think to me, that's a big takeaway from this conversation that hopefully listeners that are hearing this conversation will take away. And thank you so much for sharing all of your words of wisdom. But I know people are probably going to want to hear more from you. So what is the best way for people to find you or get in touch with you?
Well, it's extremely kind. Thank you, Tasha. So socialimpactsolutions.com is the name of our website. Obviously, we have our fundraisingquiz.org that we talked about earlier. But we publish these kinds of insights on a weekly basis on the nonprofit post, right? It's a newsletter that we started. You can opt in from socialimpactsolutions.com to go there. You know, this whole quarter has just been on donor acquisition strategies. It's like, and this is completely free. I want everyone to understand this is not a paid newsletter. This is completely free. And we just dive deep on, you know, like with Outbound. If you have a list of 100 people, they're like, okay, we're really going to try and do this. In the emails, we're like, you need to make it 1,000, right? You need to play with bigger numbers. It's the law of large numbers that you want to play with here, not the law of small numbers. And so opt into the nonprofit post. We obviously publish a lot on LinkedIn as well. So Social Impact Solutions on LinkedIn. And the whole goal, give away as much value as we possibly can. It's just like your podcast. Right. I mean, it's just like the insights, my gosh, that Charity CFO shares. I mean, you're just bringing all this light to an area that does not get very much love or attention, but it matters so much. You have one of my, I quote your website all the time.
Oh boy.
Twice this week. Audit ready, always audit ready financials. Having been through too many audits myself, like, I mean, I just like the tension just sort of melted away. Like,
what a beautiful thing. I'm glad you appreciate that, because so many times I find myself saying, you know, in another life, I've got to pick something easier. Keeping hundreds of nonprofits as close to audit ready in light of everything else going on in the world, the chaos going on in their organization, turnover and, you know, staffing at their organization, process changes. I mean, it is no small undertaking. So I appreciate the shout out there. It's the work that we do, I always say, is not easy, whether you work for the nonprofit world, within a nonprofit, or those that support the nonprofit. It's never easy. So try to not make it any harder than it already is. So,
decided to bite the biggest, you know, thing that you get. Like, hey, let's just take this whole elephant on one huge bite at a time. Audit ready financials.
You too. You know, I'll manage the budget and you're just out there trying to solve, you know, their fundraising problems. So, you know, like I said, in another life, maybe I'll pick something a little easier, but who knows? For now, I'm a glutton for punishment, but
couldn't agree more. I'm the same way. So no worries there.
So follow Social Impact Solutions on all of the channels that was mentioned before. And if you found this conversation useful, look, the reality is we talked about technology, we talked about finding stories. The best way for people to find content like this is for you to engage with it some way. So subscribe, like, share, whatever you need to do, before you do those things, the more other nonprofit leaders that are struggling with something similar, they can find this content too. That's just the way the algorithms work. It's not my science. It's beyond my hands. So thank you all for joining us for this episode. Until next time. Bye, friends.
That's all we have for you today. Once again, I'm Tasha Anderson with the Charity CFO, and this is A Modern Nonprofit Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to A Modern Nonprofit Podcast on all major streaming platforms so you will stay notified for when the latest episode drops, which will help you stay in the know about anything nonprofit related. Also, join our community on Facebook by searching for A Modern Nonprofit Podcast and follow us on all of our social media accounts. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.